Hello, and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Crystal. We're librarians at Nashville Public Library.
This podcast is where you can find reviews and recommendations of the best books, movies, and music available for checkout from the Popular Materials Department of the Nashville Public Library.
You can also learn about library programs such as concerts, film screenings, book clubs, author talks, and book signings.
By the time you hear this, the Super Bowl may be over. If the San Diego Chargers win the Super Bowl, I'll be the happiest librarian in Davidson County. Back to book business, Amanda reviews American Wife by Curtis Sittenfeld. Since February is African American History Month, I encourage everyone to pretend the wife in question is Michelle Obama. Then that book takes on a whole different implication. Crystal brings the real rock when she teaches us about Detroit punk trio Death. Closing our goodness, Jeremy reveals why he is enamored with the bromance of I Love You, Man.
I can't believe you read that.
This is Amanda here in the second month of 2010, or 2010, or whatever you're calling it. I'm sure all of you made your New Year's resolutions like good little boys and girls. So how you doing? Have you gotten up early every morning to run 5 miles like you promised? Or have you completely cut Oreos out of your diet? I don't know why you would do that, but if you're still on track, well, good for you. My resolution was to tackle my ever-increasing to-be-read list. You know, that mountainous pile of books that you check out but never seem to get to before they have to go back to the library. In honor of President's Day, I decided to finally peruse Curtis Sittenfeld's third novel, American Wife. I've wanted to read this one since it came out way back in September of 2008. This book is supposedly inspired by the life of former First Lady Laura Bush, but if I hadn't known that going in, I probably wouldn't have picked up on it. The plot follows the life of Alice Lindgren, aka Mrs. Bush, as she grows up and meets blue-blooded party guy Charlie Blackwell. Instead of Texas, we've moved north to the great state of Wisconsin, where cheese is cheese. It really is true what they say, the third time's a charm, because this is the third novel from Sittenfeld, and it's my favorite of hers. I couldn't really get into her first release prep, and while I loved the first half of her second novel, The Man of My Dreams, I hated the back half. American Wife is good all the way through. I did have a couple spots in the middle where I started getting nervous, but that should be true for any good novel. Some of the events were a little shocking, but I'll leave those as mysterious teasers. It would be interesting to know how many of the events mentioned really occurred and how many Sittenfeld created. I always have moments with this author where I feel like she's in my head and I'm sitting there thinking, I just had that same thought. I guess that means I readily identify with her characters. Sittenfeld graduated from the famed Iowa Writers' Workshop, and I would classify her work as chick lit with a brain. It's not so much Joni loves Chachi as Joan magnanimously adores Charles. Okay, so that's one less book I have to find time to read in 2010. Only 1,764 more to go. That's doable, right? So, Brian, what's on your mind?
Well, I have one question about this book that I've always wondered. Okay. If everyone didn't know that it's loosely based on the Bushes, do you think it'd still work as a novel?
I think it still works because I totally wouldn't have known it if I hadn't read somewhere beforehand and going in it was based on Laura Bush. It still makes a good story. Because she makes a lot of... I wish I would know how much she makes up as opposed to how much really comes from Mrs. Bush's life. That's what I don't know. But it was good.
Cool. Do you know who teaches at the Iowa Writers' Workshop? Marilyn Robinson, who wrote Home, which I reviewed last month. Now, I want you all to brace yourselves because I'm going to reveal something. Sometimes I recommend people read things that I haven't read myself. And last month, I recommended that people read Gilead, and I have never read that. But I read Home, and I read Housekeeping, and Gilead was the novel that Robinson wrote in between. And Housekeeping and Home were brilliant, so I knew that Gilead wasn't bad, especially because Gilead is like the companion novel to Home. Well, over the holidays, I was traveling, and I listened to Gilead in my car, and it was brilliant. It was wonderful. But I would recommend anyone who hasn't read these books yet to read Home first, even though it was published last, because Home works because there's all this tension between Jack and you don't know what his secret is. But at the end of Gilead, you learn all about Jack and what his secrets are. So I think Home would be really boring if you had read Gilead first, which is what a lot of critics said about it. And when I read it, I was like, how could they think that this was boring? This was intense. Well, if you had read Gilead first, you know what his secret is, so it's not exactly, you know, there's no tension there. The other thing I wanted to say, too, was since I started working here at the library in popular materials, I've began to pay attention to audiobooks and sort of the craft of audiobooks and which audiobooks work and which audiobooks don't work. And Tim Jerome's performance reading Gilead was the best I've ever heard on an audiobook. The main character in Gilead is John Ames, and he's writing letters to his son. And Ames is a pastor, and he's trying to not be pastorly. He's trying to not sound like he's speaking to his congregation. But he's hard. He keeps, like, falling back into this very, like, patriarchal tone of voice. Well, Robinson's brilliant to even capture that, like, that really subtle, like, I'm trying to not speak a certain way, but it's coming out this way. And Tim Jerome's reading gets that, too, just perfect. It was just, like, the best audiobook reading I've ever heard. And since I've started paying attention to audiobooks and the ones that work and the ones that don't, the ones that are put out by BBC Audio are the absolute best. Like, their quality is amazing, their readers are great, and other audiobook publishers, really big ones that are in every library across the country, I won't name them, like, those aren't as good. The CDs are cheap, and they skip, there's bad overdubs, it's just like, what? But the ones from BBC Audio are always amazing, they blow me away. So, I just wanted to wax poetic about that.
Do you think, Gilead, you enjoyed it because it was on audio and you had such a good reader, or do you think just the book itself is brilliant?
The book itself was just really good. I mean, Marilynne Robinson is the best prose writer alive in America. I mean, absolutely.
Hands down.
Like, I just, those two books, like, and it was so, because every book I've read since then, it just doesn't compare. They're all bad. Like, they're not good enough. Like, I cannot read that writing and then read even authors that I like. Just be like, sorry, but you are just not on the same caliber as her.
Iowa Writers Workshop.
Exactly. And then I realized, like, she teaches there where all these other writers come out of. It's like, well, maybe, yeah, she's on to something.
Mm-hmm.
So, really good. But now for something completely different, for the most part. New York Times best-selling author and Essence Magazine number one best-selling author, Carl Weber, is coming to the Nashville Public Library on February 11th. Mr. Weber will be giving a talk and signing books in the Popular Materials Department of the main library at noon on February 11th. Show up. There's surprises, too. It's worth your while.
I can't believe you listened to that.
Last year, I was introduced to an obscure Detroit proto-punk band called Death. Proto-punk is a term now used to represent artists who were the precursors of punk rock. Death's album, For the Whole World to See, was released in 2009 on indie label Drag City, and it was over 30 years in coming. The band Death consists of the Hackney brothers, David, Danis, and Bobby, who grew up in an African-American family living in a mostly white neighborhood in Detroit. Early on, their parents introduced them to artists like Muddy Waters, Ray Charles, Patsy Cline, and Hank Williams. In February of 1964, the boys were forever changed when their father sat them down to watch the Beatles perform on the Ed Sullivan Show. Soon after, brother David found a discarded acoustic guitar in an alley, patched it up, and taught himself how to play. By 1970, the three brothers started their first band, their music being heavily Motown-influenced. In early 73, the brothers went to an Iggy and the Stooges show and found their true musical direction. They recorded a demo that eventually got into the hands of Clive Davis, who gave them an advance to record a 12-song album. There was a catch. Davis wanted them to change their name from Death before the album was released. They told Clive Davis where he could go and leaked the 7 completed tracks as 45s for free. Then nothing from the band for years until brother Bobby's son heard one of those rare 45s at a party and asked his dad about it. The 34-year-old master tapes were found, and a deal with Drag City was worked out to release them as an album. For the whole world to see is a mean 26 and a half minutes of raw but tight, politically charged, guitar-driven music that's not afraid to feed back. Here's a song clip which concerns a mental state I often find myself in.
It's a skin, not a fin. Why is my head spinning around in a dream? It's a time to flip. Why all this light popping up in my face? Or am I freaking out?
For more info, visit Death's MySpace page or the Drag City Records website.
I can't believe you watched that.
I won't try to convince you that I Love You Man is a groundbreaking film or that it subverts the dominant paradigm of romantic comedies, and I won't make a case for the film as a manifesto on platonic love between two men. These are overwrought, if not entirely unreasonable, ways of reading this film, which stars Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, and they're not why I like this movie. Rudd plays Peter, a recently engaged realtor whose fiancée, played by Rashida Jones, is concerned at Peter's lack of close male friends. After a series of awkward encounters with potential friends, Peter meets Sydney at an open house. Their friendship soon grows from the occasional lunch into full-on jam sessions of Rush songs in Sydney's garage. That gets the boy meets boy out of the way, followed by boy loses boy, and of course, they make up at the end. It's the standard formula for nearly any Hollywood movie, and this film follows it step by step. So why bother watching it? If you're an easygoing extrovert who's friends with everybody, then maybe you'll think Peter and Sydney are sad and unlikable. But if you're like the rest of us, awkward and shy, and you regret every other word that comes out of your mouth, then maybe you'll see something of yourself in the movie, and maybe you'll love it. So, Bill, what's to love at Movies at Maine this month?
Movies at Maine is proud to present the thriller Experiment in Terror. This thriller, directed by Blake Edwards, stars Glenn Ford and Lee Remick. So come to the Downtown Public Library, Maine Auditorium, on Saturday, February 6th at 2 p.m. We are located at 615 Church Street. There will be a trivia contest along with the thrills and chills. Just remember, Experiment in Terror, showing at the Downtown Public Library at 615 Church Street on Saturday, February 6th at 2 p.m. And it's free. Can't beat that.
You've been listening to Nashville Public Library's Pop-Matic podcast. For more information, please visit www.library.nashville.org.
That's on the interwebs.